Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Zydus Life Sciences Limited Quarter 1 FY25 Earnings Conference Call. Please note that all participant line will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the opening remarks. Please note that this conference is being recorded, and I now hand over the conference to Mr. Ganesh Nayak, Executive Director of Zydus Life Sciences. Thank you, and over to you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our post-results teleconference for the quarter ended June 30th, 2024. For today's call, we have with us Dr. Sharvil Patel, Managing Director, Mr. Nitin Parekh, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Arvind Bothra, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations, and Mr. Alok Garg, Senior Vice President from the Managing Director's Office. Let me now give you a broad overview of the developments during the quarter. It's my pleasure to share that we commenced fiscal 2025 on a strong note, sustaining the growth momentum across the businesses during the quarter. Overall, we delivered a strong double-digit growth during the quarter. This, coupled with sustained profitability improvement, has helped us achieve the highest ever operating profit and margins during the quarter. Our India branded formulations business outperformed the market growth with 13% year-on-year growth. The consumer wellness business delivered an industry-leading double-digit growth during the quarter, aided by improved demand scenario and an extended summer season. Our US formulations business delivered a stellar performance both on a sequential and year-on-year basis, driven by new launches and volume expansion in the base portfolio. Our international business continued its growth trajectory during the quarter. With that, let me take you through the financial numbers for the quarter gone by. We registered consolidated revenues of 62.1 billion rupees, up 21% on a year-on-year basis and 12% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. EBITDA for the quarter was 20.8 billion rupees, a growth of 38% on a year-on-year and 28% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. EBITDA margin for the quarter stood at 33.6%. which is an improvement of 430 basis points on a year-on-year and 410 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Net profit for the quarter stood at 14.2 billion rupees, up 31% on a year-on-year and 20% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. We deleveraged our balance sheet during the quarter by repaying the entire debt. Now, let me take you through the operating highlights for the first quarter of FY25 for our key business segments. Our India geography, which comprises of the formulations and consumer wellness business, accounted for 37% of the total revenues during the quarter and grew 15% year on year. As mentioned earlier, our branded formulations business in India grew faster than the market during the quarter, with 13% year-on-year growth. The business outpaced the market growth both in the chronic and acute segments. Portfolio of key pillar brands and innovation products registered strong volume growth, driving the overall performance during the quarter. We launched 10 new products, including line extensions, with three first-in-India launches. We retained our leadership position in the nephrology and remained the fastest growing Indian company in oncology in the IPM. The business grew faster than the market in key therapies of cardiology, gynecology, derma, respiratory, anti-infectives, and super speciality therapies of oncology and nephrology. Contribution of chronic portfolio has increased consistently over the last several years and stood at 41.3% as per IQVIA, MAT June 2024, which is an improvement of 430 basis points over the last 3 years. Our consumer wellness business recorded revenues of 8.4 billion rupees, up 21% on a year-on-year basis. The growth was broad-based and largely driven by 17% volume growth. The personal care segment, which comprises of Nycil and the Everyouth brands, continued to deliver robust performance with yet another quarter of strong double-digit growth. Food and nutrition segment witnessed recovery during the quarter and posted double-digit growth as well. Gross margins continued to improve both sequentially and on a year-on-year basis. Now, let me take you through the performance of our U.S. formulations business. The business accounted for 51% of the consolidated revenues during the quarter, with revenues of 30.9 billion rupees, up 23% on a sequential basis. We launched 7 new products during the quarter. New launches for the quarter include the launch of our second 505B2 product, namely Zituvimet in the area of metabolic disorder management, and Mirabegron ER tablets. We filed 5 additional ANDAs and received approval for 6 ANDAs, including 2 tentative approvals during the quarter. On the international markets front, the demand scenario remained strong across key markets, despite ongoing political and economic challenges in some of the countries. Overall, the business posted revenues of 5.3 billion rupees, up 9% year-on-year. On the operations front, the US FDA has classified 2 of our injectable facilities located in the Ahmedabad SEZ and at Jarod near Baroda as official action indicated, which is OAI. We are working closely with the US FDA to implement the necessary corrective actions as required. Now, this concludes the business review. I would now request Dr. Sharvil Patel to take you through the key drivers across businesses as well as initiatives in our innovation program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nayak, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure to have you all here on the call today. We are pleased with our performance during the quarter. All our businesses continued their robust growth journey from the previous fiscal and performed on expected lines with a focus on fulfilling diverse healthcare needs of the customers across the market. We remain committed to strengthen our core business and explore newer avenues to generate better outcomes for our patients. On the India formulations front, our efforts are directed towards expanding the presence across focused therapies and in turn serve a larger set of customers. We have successfully leveraged our rich and diverse portfolio of innovation products to offer novel solutions to the patients to satisfy their unmet healthcare needs. We have been conducting various patient support programs and activities to create greater awareness amongst patients, particularly in the area of the unmet healthcare needs. In the US, multiple building blocks such as a comprehensive portfolio of generics, cross dosage forms, capability to deliver novel solutions to patients through the LiqMeds acquisition, the specialty space, and investments in rare disease space are now in place. This will greatly enhance our ability to address diverse patient needs. This, coupled with strong customer relationships, a network of regulatory compliant manufacturing facilities, and an agile supply chain, will ensure sustained growth trajectory for the US business going forward. On the international market front, our focus remains on expanding the presence in selected therapies across key emerging markets by leveraging a global R&D portfolio of generics and specialty products. Our innovation pipeline across different areas continues to make progress and achieve the desired milestones. With this, let me share some material developments on our innovation efforts during the quarter. On the NCE research front, during the quarter, we completed patient recruitment for the phase 2B/3 clinical trials of saroglitazar magnesium for primary biliary cholangitis indication and initiated the phase 2B clinical trial of saroglitazar magnesium for metabolic dysfunction-associated steatohepatitis, which is known as MASH, indications for the US. We also completed patient recruitment for phase 2 clinical trials of usnoflast, earlier known as ZYIL1, for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is known as ALS, indication during the quarter. In the biotech space, we submitted a market authorization application for one of the monoclonal antibodies to the Indian regulator. On the novel biologics front, we initiated a phase 1 clinical trial in India for an anti-propadin molecule during the quarter. Recently, in the month of July, we received marketing approvals from the Mexican authorities, regulatory authorities, for two products. Bava, which is the biosimilar of bevacizumab, and the brand name Mamitra for the biosimilar of trastuzumab. On the specialty 5-5B2 development front, recently in the month of July, we received final approval for our third NDA, Zituvimet XR, which is the sitagliptin metformin extended release tablets in the area of metabolic disorder management. With this approval, we now have all three NDAs of the sitagliptin and combination franchise approved through the 5-5-B2 route. All the three NDAs have received first cycle approvals. Thank you. And now we can start with the Q&A session. Over to the coordinator for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We'll now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may raise your hand from participant tab on your screen. Participants are requested to use headphones or earphones while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles.
Please start.
Okay. The first question is from Yash Gandhi.
Hello. Hi, am I audible?
Yes.
Thanks for the opportunity. So, sir, congratulations again on a great set of numbers. So, I think this quarter we've got 33% EBITDA margin. It's one of the highest companies ever seen in the history. So, I just want to understand the sustainability of this sort of margin going the next two quarters for the year.
So I think obviously this quarter has been an exceptionally good quarter on the margins front. And as we have stated earlier, that on the last year, we ended on a high with a 27.5% margin. And with looking at the phasing of the coming year, we expect to see an improvement in the margin by 100 to 150 basis points from FY24 margin.
Okay. And so on the US business, so this year we've grown 26% YoY. This is an excellent growth. How do you see the trajectory of the US formulation business doing this year?
So we see healthy double digit growth for the US business during the coming financial year. This financial year, I mean.
Okay, got it. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Kunal.
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, good afternoon. So first question on the revenue guidance that we had provided for FY25, we had said almost around high teens kind of top line growth that we expected. Since the first quarter has been meaningfully above that, are we revising it or we are staying with the same guidance?
We continue to believe that we will deliver high teens growth for this year.
Sure. And one of the specialty portfolio across two geographies, one is US, where we have now few commercialized products, etc., right? Zokinvy, etc. So would you be quantifying the current contribution of our specialty portfolio in US?
I think it's still in the very early stages. As I said, the
Not
patient acquisition or the finding new patients is a slow process in the US. So once it becomes sizable and meaningful, we will obviously talk about it differently. But right now, it doesn't form a major part of the overall revenue.
And last one on the India business. We have a portfolio of specialty product with our in-house research like Saroglitazar and some of the first in the market biosimilar launches, etc. Right. So to that extent, we have also said that that portfolio has grown very strongly. Could you quantify the current contribution of that portfolio for us?
So I
And
don't
maybe the
think
growth as well.
our focus on India is not driven by dosage form. It's a therapy and disease focus. So and brand focus. So I don't think we do it that way. But as I said, they do form an integral part of the overall future innovative portfolio that we have, which is both, as you mentioned, the Saroglitazar and the breast cancer and other oncology therapies that we are working on. So it's more a disease area way we look at it and how much share of that area we do have. And as we alluded, like in oncology, we are now the largest and the fastest growing organization. And similarly in nephrology and other segments, obviously all aided by both the proprietary products that we have, but also the products that are required beyond just the couple of new drugs that we have.
Is it fair to say that there'll be more launches coming, right? And hence, this portfolio will keep getting bigger and bigger, which is high growth for us.
Yes, that is a right statement. We do expect these products to become the largest brands for the organization, which will obviously mean that they'll form a larger part of the overall portfolio.
Sure, sir. Thank you. I have more questions as well.
Can the coordinator ensure that all others are on mute? Because there's some noise coming for other people talking.
Thank you, Kunal. The next question is from Neha.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Given you're maintaining your revenue margin guidance of the 150 basis points margin expansion, is it fair to assume that the cost base that we have seen in this quarter, let's say the R&D cost or the other operating cost, R&D would materially increase from here? The SG&A cost would remain at these levels because this was a seasonally strong quarter for the India business as well as US, we did higher. So how should we think about the operating cost from a run rate perspective?
Excluding R&D, Neha, there has been an increase in this particular quarter, but about 125 crores in this quarter are of one-off natures. And therefore, I think 1200 to 1250 other cost, excluding R&D, would be the right basis for you to project.
What is this 125 crores related to, sir, the one-off that you're mentioning?
There are some ERF-related costs, there are some legal cost provisions, there are some project-related consultancy assignments, some professional fees. So there
Okay.
are many items within that, but they
Okay,
are
understood.
recurring nature.
Okay. And on the R&D, how should we look at the R&D given we have the patient recruitment completed for two of our NCE products?
So as I said, our expectation is that we'll see around 8% kind of spend on R&D, and that's what we hope to maintain.
8% of sales for a full year basis.
Yeah.
Understood. Understood. My second question, is on the US business. Obviously, this quarter we had the benefit of, the Revlimid as well as, Mirabegron. As we think about the subsequent, first in this quarter, was there any improvement in the base business besides Revlimid and Mira? And was Revlimid flattish quarter on quarter, higher quarter on quarter? Any qualitative color there?
So Revlimid was obviously higher quarter on quarter, and there was a ramp up to the base business also.
Okay, understood. And as I think about the next 3 or 4 quarters, other than Mira, can you give us some color on what sort of launches we should be expecting? Any other meaningful launch that we should be seeing? Anything that you can provide us on the US, for the base business?
As I said, we do expect a double-digit growth in the US, and that factors in obviously our current base business and new products launches.
Okay, so and how many launches should we ex be expecting this year, sir?
For the full year, we expect 25, around 25 plus launches.
Okay, understood. And my last question, one, given we have ample amount of net cash that we are sitting on, sorry, given the ample amount of cash generation, how should we look at capital allocation strategy, for future growth? What would be two or three key areas that you would be focusing on for inorganic growth opportunities, and any ticket size that you're thinking would be is something that you'd be comfortable with?
Yeah, so I think as I had also tried to speak about in the last quarter, I think a key focus will be scaling up our specialty business in the US. And for that, obviously, we will look to see how do we deploy efficiently our capital to not only scale up the business, but also have a diversifiedly large business on the specialty front. The second area is India. India, we're done well. We understand the business well. We will continue to see if there are opportunities to in India, both from the brand side or some other adjacencies. And recently, with the last 5 years good scale up of our international business and also good profitability that we're seeing, we do believe there can be specific opportunities in the international businesses that we would look to do. Beyond that, I think, as you said, we have transformed from just being being a pharmaceutical business to more of a life sciences organization. And that would mean that how do we create the right solutions for the patients in different areas will become important. So going beyond the pill becomes very critical for us. So whether it is companion diagnostic, med devices or medical med devices or direct to patient services, we will be looking at many of these opportunities to scale up our business further.
Understood. Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Neha. The next question is from Bino.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
I have a few questions. To start with on Mirabegron, Sharvil, how do you look at
Bino, your voice is not audible. Can you speak up?
Hello, is it better now?
Yes.
Okay, great. How do you look at the timelines on Mirabegron? I know it's difficult because litigation is going on, but would you think this can be a few quarters opportunity, or will it last till the next patent expiry? How do you look at it?
I think you answered it saying it is difficult to answer that question, but at least I think short term, at least for the next couple of quarters, it is what it is today, but little longer term is still very difficult to answer.
Second, on this product, Opsumit or macitentan, I believe you have an FTF in that. Is that still valid? Because I saw somebody got an approval whom I thought was not an FTF.
I won't have off a direct answer on this. So it's better my team gets back to you on it specifically, so I don't give it. But I do remember that we did have some first to file status. But I'll request my team to give you more specific details on that.
Sure. And regarding Cabometyx, which we recently in-licensed, I believe there was a court verdict expected sometime around this time. Has it come yet?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the molecule? Which one did you say?
Cabometyx. which we in-licensed recently.
The one
Cabo
we licensed from,
Santinib.
yeah, the from MSN, right?
Yes.
So I think that's under still litigation. So as and when we have any outcome on that, we can discuss that. But obviously there are some it seems to be a good product for the future.
And finally, on saroglitazar or PBC indication, when do you expect the readout? Any timeline?
It'll be in the next financial year, hopefully in the end of, I mean, second quarter of next financial year.
Okay, so FY26. So filing would be filing next year. So it could be an FY27 opportunity if everything goes well, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll jump back.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Harsh.
Hi, good afternoon, sir.
Yes.
My question is pretty broad-based on the U.S. Industry. So after COVID, we had a couple of years of not for the company, but overall at the industry level, we had some sort of headwinds in terms of price erosion and lower demand. So just wanted to get a macro view over next 2, 3 years. What kind of environment are we seeing in terms of FDA approvals and the pricing of the base generic formulations?
So I think on the approval side, FDA continues to deliver on good number of approvals. So I think fundamentally that's remained constant. I think also, I don't think the nature of business has changed in the US. It is a highly competitive, price-sensitive market. And so whether it was COVID or earlier or now, we don't see any fundamentally different ways of behaving in the market. I think what succeeds in the market is portfolio, your service levels, and how fast are you able to deliver your products and what kind of service levels you are able to maintain with your customers. And strong focus on profitability helps you make right decisions. I think so fundamentally, all those things remain the same for that market, to whether it was in the past or for the future.
And in terms of demand scenario, do you feel anything is different for next 2, 3 years compared to what it was there or after COVID between 2021 to 2023? And in comparison, do you feel the demand scenario changing materially over next 2, 3 years?
No, I think at least when we look at our generics business, it all depends on large molecules going off patent. And as you can see, till the next 5 years, there are significant amount of products that will still go off patent. So the pipeline of future generic portfolio remains attractive.
Sure. And for the international business, the rest of the world business, so we see a lot of pharma companies now focusing on that pie of the market. So how does it sit in your overall strategy? And what kind of growth do you foresee over next, if I have to take a 3 to 5 years kind of an horizon?
Yeah, so I think for us, the international businesses have delivered a consistent double-digit CAGR over the last 5 years and also have shown significant improvement in profitability. And so we believe going forward, the business will definitely scale up meaningfully with strong double-digit growth and also will continue on the improvement on profitability. So we are quite bullish on the international market. And that's why we said we will also continue to look at adding more products and geographies to expand it.
Sure, thank you. And that was from my end. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sayan.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Dr. Sharvil, I mean, your comments suggest that scaling up, US specialty is one of the things that you will be pursuing. I'm wondering if you can provide, some aspiration that you carry with respect to the US business, how you want to do this. We have, mixed experience. It seems to be a tough one. I just want to understand what capabilities, you would need to sort of develop to address that opportunity. in a way that, you know, and what kind of risk and size of acquisition that you're looking at? Because I would understand that it probably would require an acquisition for you to meaningfully scale up US specialty. So if you can give some color, I mean, we are aware of some of the products, you know, that you are developing, the rare disease, the liver disease. It would be great if you can, you know, give some clarity as to how you're thinking about this business and what are the steps we should expect.
Sure. So I think there are two areas that we are focusing on when it comes to the US specialty side. One is the rare disease business through our business unit of Sentinel Therapeutics. So today we have two commercialized products, one which we just recently acquired and one which we had done a few years ago, a year ago. And we have a third molecule, which is the CUTX-101, which is in the NDA stage of filing. So currently it's a three asset business. And the way we look at it is that slowly build that business up over the next 2 years, mostly through small inorganic opportunities to scale that up and build a niche rare disease business. Now in the rare disease business, the focus has to be obviously first is to have a product to market because again, the disease is very rare, but then is to find new patients, which means a lot of work that needs to get done in education, in getting early diagnosis and getting the right diagnosis and treatment, because these are life-saving drugs. So our effort is on creating a larger access for some of these drugs and finding the patients at the right time so that we can make them available. With respect to the orphan disease business that we hope to build, today we have one asset, which is Saro. If everything goes well, it's a calendar year 27 kind of opportunity to commercialize. I do agree that our aspirations is to be in more than one product and not just a single product. Though Saro on its own has a good business profile that we can build on. But we will look at an inorganic opportunity over the next 2 years to have a commercially ready footprint in the US when Saro comes up for launch. And that is what we hope to do in the next 2 years, is to find a commercial asset that we can either partner or we could acquire and build a front-end commercial asset in the US, which can also take Saro with it. Even if it doesn't, we do already have an organic plan to build our own commercial team in the US. But we will keep both options open for us for the specialty side of it. I mean, the orphan side of it in the US. So these are the two areas we hope to build. We definitely don't want to be a one product company. So Saro is very important right now, but we will hope to build onto it either through licensing or inorganic opportunity. And if you look at the timeline, obviously 27 is Saro, but our future molecules are 2030 and beyond. So we do in the next 5 years require some more options beyond just Saro. So that's what we will focus on.
Great. The second question I had was on biosimilars. So you have done, you know, quite well in India, plus some emerging market approvals have also come through. But unlike many of the peers who have global development targeting US and Europe, you have generally avoided that space. So why you are pursuing a different strategy here? And is there any change in thought process with, you know, evolving regulation or the competitive dynamics? Anything that you can share given the capabilities that you've already built for India and emerging markets?
Yes, I think we are quite aligned in terms of what we need to do for India and US, both in terms of the offerings that we can give in terms of a large pipeline of biosimilars and also the annual capacities that we have built for, which is quite large and a total monoclonal capacity of almost 350 KL. I think, you know, why we decided not to enter the developed markets for two reasons. One is both from the investment point of view, the investments were pretty large and sizable for doing a generic version of a biologic. And the second was obviously access to the market, looking at the high rebates that exist in different markets. So I think we found it very difficult to justify the investment from our point of view. I think two reasons will make us think again about it. One is obviously if the investment thesis comes down, which is when if we can go towards more a generic strategy, which is a PKPD strategy, then we can look at taking up some of the developed markets. And second, which we seem to think it is happening, is the interchangeability of biosimilars that may come to effect. So if both those triggers happen, we would look to take development for the developed markets also. But currently, we are limited on that aspect. And again, it's also to do with our allocation of asset allocation in terms of resources. We do have enough opportunities on the novel side, which is still higher risk, but obviously greater opportunity. So we are focusing our efforts more on that side. But as I said, if any of these both of these changes do happen, we will potentially look to see if we want to take it up for the developed market.
Yeah, great. Thanks. I'll join back.
Thank you. The next question is from Kunal.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity again. So one on the product that is that was approved today, Ingrezza, is that a near-term opportunity that we should build on either in FY25 or 26?
No.
So it's more of a longer-term opportunity?
Yeah, it
and
is not
to...
long-term, for sure.
Okay, okay. So we have settlement, I guess, right? And so it should be in line with that settlement, is the good way to put it?
Yeah, it's definitely not a near-term opportunity. And as I said, we do have exclusivity and sole exclusivity, as we have stated. So whenever that market formations happen, that will be the opportunity.
Sure, sure. And another one on the R&D expense. I'm not sure if this question was asked earlier, but we had said it would be between 7 to 8%. So do we maintain that guidance even in the, let's say, this year and the medium term?
Yes, for FY25, we maintain that guidance.
Sure. And beyond FY25, do you think that our some of the trials may be for NASH, etc., it could be large clinical trials and we might need to accelerate the R&D?
So earlier we had guided that our R&D year-on-year may range between 7 to 9% with average for 3 years around 8%. So we continue with that guidance even today.
Sure, sir. Sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you, Kunal. We'll wait for attendees to raise their hand and ask questions. The next question is from Sayan Mukherjee.
Yeah, hey, thanks. On sitagliptin and other approvals that you have, sitagliptin and combination approvals for the US, how are you thinking about it based on the experience so far? I think you talked about possibly mid-high single-digit market share there. What are your latest expectations around that product?
Yeah, so I think it's been a good learning for us on trying to see how do we get a 505B2 market and successful. So I think what we can say comfortably is that because of this opportunity and what we've been able to do, it's definitely not a one-year opportunity, but at least a 3 to 5 year opportunity. So we will see consistent revenue on this business from this franchise, which is very meaningful and good for the organization and learning. So as I said, it's not a one-year opportunity, but will continue for a longer period of time. The second is we continue to see how do we get more access to the overall gliptin franchise, and we hope to build more market share from what we have done today. And we're seeing some good opportunities. So only time will tell whether if we can take up further opportunities for the coming year. But overall, it will be a meaningfully good product for us over the next 3 to 5 years.
Right. So will sitagliptin go generic before that? I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, whether you would have a window of 5 years to scale this up.
It will go generic before. But we have a long-term contract which will not get renewed till 5 years.
Okay, understood. And then the second one, I wanted to check on vaccines. I mean, it seems, you know, you talked about it, FY 27, 28 time frame. Any update on that, especially on the export side, you can share?
Yeah, so I think we are on track for that period of time. There are three aspects that are important for our success. One is pre-qualification of the facilities for the three vaccines. The second is the clinical trial, you know, completion at different stages and for post pre-qualification to make sure that we can achieve that in that time frame. And once we are able to achieve those two, then obviously is to participate in the public tenders that come up in 27. So we are on track to do that. No immediate hiccups, and at least on the PQ and other things, we are going on a positive direction now.
So this is fiscal 27 or calendar 27 when the tenders come up?
Ideally, it'll be more fiscal 28 calendar, but calendar 27 is fiscal 28.
Yeah. Understood. Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Sayan. Requesting attendees to raise their hand for further questions. The next question is from Kunal Dhamesha.
Thank you, sir. One on the ALS for which we are doing the clinical trial for ZYIL1. If you could provide some color on the disease landscape in terms of number of patients, potentially current treatment lines, and where are we planning to differentiate?
So I think more detail, I would definitely request Arvind to give you specifically, but on broader side, today there are no critically approved treatments for ALS. ALS is one of the classified orphan rare diseases that exist. So there is a sizable population of patients, both in India, if you look at it from a home market point of view, or obviously US and other countries. So a highly unmet need exists for patients with ALS. As you know, the lifespan is only meaningfully only 2 to 3 years or less, or around that period. So it is a very debilitating disease. And as I said, with no currently a class of treatment that is very effective, we see a good opportunity for usnoflast in this area. Our phase two trial recruitment is over. And if everything goes well, if we see good data and good blood barrier penetration, this will move into a rapid phase 2B or phase 3 directly from a global program point of view. So we are quite excited. I think the timeline for this trial would be shorter because of the need and the endpoints. So it looks good in terms of a speedy development timeline for this drug, if we are able to meet the critical endpoints and the safety margins that we are required to do so. And as I said, it is this therapy class has a broader opportunity in any motor neuron disorder. So ALS is our first target. We will continue to explore Parkinson's as the other indication. And then there are some other opportunities beyond that. But currently, we are focused on these two indications.
Oh, sir. And one on the saroglitazar, I think we had got some FDA voucher of I think fast track designation or orphan drug designation. If you could remind us what that is and how that helps us in terms of development timeline or the exclusivity.
So we do have both those status. I think we don't have a voucher you achieve when you get full approval, and then if you still maintain both of those things, then you get a voucher. But so I think voucher is not something that we are building for right now. But we do get expedited review depending on the competition at that point in time and how many drugs are approved. So I think coming next calendar financial year, we can give you more update once we file the NDA. to suggest whether we are still in, we are definitely in the orphan space, whether we are also in the fast track space or not.
Sure, sir. And any update on our recent compliance issues at Jarod facility? How are we planning to tackle it? Have we submitted more detailed CAFAs, or have we kind of onboarded some consultant to resolve those observations?
Yeah, I think we're taking it very seriously to make sure that we address the concerns. So, as a first step, we have obviously done the response to the FDA in terms of the remediation that we have done and continue to do. The second aspect is to request the FDA for a meeting to talk about our long-term plan with these sites, which we hope to do over the next quarter. And post that, we can keep you more updated to see how do we tackle the observations at the site. But we are working very closely to do so, and we'll keep you updated if you have any more updates on that.
And are there any compliance related expenses already baked into our quarter one number?
So right now we don't have an external, we are not using any external faculty. So currently we don't have any external expenses, but whatever has to be built in has already been built in the form.
Sure, sir. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from Nitin.
So thanks for taking my question. Sharvilbhai, on the US business, this year, obviously, because of with Revlimid as well as Mirabegron playing out the way it is playing out, and next year, we still have a meaningful Revlimid tailwind for us. Now, I mean, when you look at the you look at your US business, say, F27 onwards, I mean, do we have enough drivers in the business to really grow on the top of the high base that we'll end up creating in 25 and 26?
Yes, I think we do still have a good amount of pipeline of products to come through. Second, as I said, we do have some settlements which allow us sole exclusive launches in the years to come, which are meaningful. So I think between the portfolio and exclusive launches, we do see an opportunity to continue to do well. And as I said, on the base business, we continue to grow. So we hope to continue to do that with the new launches.
Thanks. And secondly, in the past, you've talked a bit about your plans for two for A, injectables and two transdermals. So, if you can just give us a little more update on where we are on our complex injectable plans and on the transdermal launches.
So I think it's transdermals. I think we are still a couple of years away from full scale up. So I think that business will continue to get built. On the injectables front, again, I think most of our drug device kind of products are a few years out. So nothing in the medium term that we short term that we see. So I mean, many of these are more a couple of years down the line plans. Transdermals is more nearer, but sorry, transdermals is more nearer, but injectables is still a couple of years out.
Okay. And secondly, on the India business, we've had a pretty good growth in this quarter. I mean, we have seen a meaningful pickup coming through in this business, an improvement in momentum over the last few quarters now, as you've been highlighting. I mean, over this period of time, has there been a proportionate or a meaningful increase in that domestic business profitability also qualitatively?
Yes, I think with the double-digit growth that we have delivered, we have seen also good improvement in profitability also. And as I said, our sort of critical growth booster brands and key launches are now more than 45+% of our business and growing very fast. So once that business becomes 60-65% of our overall growth driver, we will continue to see this strong momentum on growth.
So, when you look at the next 2 years for the domestic business, what kind of market outperformance should one look forward to?
I think we do expect to do better than market and register double-digit growth.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from Alok.
Hello.
Alok, you can speak up.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just a question which is pending on Asacol HD. Any update on that? Anything on the competition side?
Yes, I think we still build for competition in this financial year. We were assuming there was some competition coming, but we haven't seen it yet.
And as per your intelligence, what is keeping the competition away?
I think it's a difficult product to develop, so we took quite a while to do it. I guess people are also struggling.
Okay. And for the US for this year, how many new product launches are being planned?
25 plus.
Okay. All right. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Tushar.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Sir, just firstly on generic Vascepa, how has been the scale-up in this product? Are we now to the run rate where we expect to be, or we are yet to reach that stable run rate?
No, we are far away. We will require, I mean, right now it's not at the run rate that we expected because of the capacities that we're not able to get from our partner. But meaningfully, I don't think anything in this calendar year can happen.
Understood. So is it the capacity constraint is on account of, as in the regulatory issue at the partner site, or the capacity buildup itself is going to take much longer?
The capacity buildup and pricing is very poor, so we don't want to do it at this pricing.
Understood, understood. So secondly, just a clarification on EBITDA margin guidance of 28-29. We are already at 29%, but this quarter was heavy both in terms of let's say Revlimid and consumer wellness compared to say the four quarters of FY25, and subsequently it is going to be again the fourth quarter to be of such kind of phenomenon. So still 28-29% guidance. So if possible to call out other niche products in FY25 which can help sustain such kind of profitability apart
So
from.
last year, as I said, we achieved 27.5%, and our current guidance update for this year is about 100 to 150 basis points better than FY24.
Understood. And this is considering as earlier participant was asking, this is considering Asacol HD competition. So if that doesn't come through, we have a scope to further improve the margins.
Yes.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Tushar. As there are no further questions from the participant, on behalf of Zydus Life Sciences Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines and exit the webinar.